One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast, you end up waiting a lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Detroit, Michigan. I'll be there Friday, November 8th at the Magic Bag. Minneapolis, Minnesota. I'll be there Saturday, November 9th at the Parkway Theater. Madison, Wisconsin. I'll be there Friday and Saturday, November 15th and 16th at Comedy on State. And Portland, Oregon, I'll be at the Aladdin Theater Saturday, November 23rd. Get your tickets to those shows and all shows on my website at ryansickler.com.
The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to the Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it in the Night Pants Studios. I'm Ryan Sickler, ryansickler.com, Ryan Sickler on all your social media. And I'm going to start this episode like I start them all by saying thank you. Thank you for real for whatever you do in any way you support anything I do. I genuinely appreciate it. You guys are great. If you got to have more, then I'm telling you, I've been talking about it forever. You got to have the Patreon. It's called The Honeydew with Y'all, and is this show with you guys. And it's the best $5 you'll spend. It's only $5. We've had it that way for years, and it's your show. And I promise you, no one has stories like you guys. Nobody. And the way back, it's been... Listen, I really love doing that show. It's so nice to sit and laugh and listen to people's childhoods in a fun, funny way. It's one of those shows you have to watch. We dig through people's social media. We bring, their photos and stuff to life in the story. It's really well done. Come see me on tour if I'm in town and you're around. Tickets are on my website at ryansickler.com. All right, that's it. That's the biz. You guys know what we do here. We highlight the lowlights. I always say that these are the stories behind the storytellers. And I am very excited to have this guest on. Ladies and gentlemen, first time here on the Honeydew, Andy Richter. Welcome to the Honeydew.
Thank you. 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 Thank you.
That's you right there.
Yeah.
Right
all right. There. Yeah.
Like you've never been on TV.
Well, I want to. Thank you. Thank you.
Please promote, before we get into it, promote anything you'd like, please.
Okay. Well, I have a podcast of my own, The Three Questions, that's been on for 5 years now. And it's like this. It's an hour interview. It's kind of specifically about people talking about where they're from and where they're going and sort of what life has taught them. It's basic, I don't have a vacation home because all that money was spent on therapy, therapy and private school for my children. So I've been in therapy for a long time and I really believe in it. And I kind of want it to have a podcast that I'm not a therapist, but that kind of was in that sort of vein, conversationally.
Yeah. I'm in no way qualified.
Yeah, no, but I don't like tell people what to do with their lives, but I do think it's interesting because there are people that they do not do a lot of self-examination. There's a lot of people that don't seem to give a shit about figuring out why do you keep running into the same brick wall? And they're like, I don't know. I just like it. So I just find people that are self-reflective and are sort of curious as to how do I get better at being alive? I like those conversations. So that's what that is. But then I also And that's been through Conan, Team Coco, Conan's podcast company. Like I say, it's been 5 years now. And then SiriusXM bought his company, and he has a channel, Channel 104 on SiriusXM is the Conan O'Brien channel. And they wanted to start doing more, and they, by they, I mean SiriusXM, wanted to start doing more radio programming because the channel kind of started out as podcasts and clips from the old shows. And they wanted to, you know, make it a real radio station. So I've been doing a call-in show.
Oh, great.
Which sounds a lot like your Patreon.
Oh, yeah.
It's me. It's an hour. It's on Wednesdays, 1 p.m. Pacific time. And it's called the Andy Richter Call-In Show. And I have a guest host. And we solicit calls on a topic which is like dating disasters or ghost stories.
So you pick the topic, throw it out there.
We put it out on social media, and then people, there's a Google form or a number that they can call, and they leave a message, and then we do that for an hour. And it's one of the most fun hours of my week now, and I love doing it. And, you know, and it's like, it's also, you know, I'm going to a radio studio, you know, you get to feel like a grown-up radio guy. And it's just really fun. And it was really weird when I first started doing it, because I would think, oh, I got a show. I got a recording. And I think like what homework am I forgetting? What homework am I forgetting? It's like, oh, nothing. I don't need, I just got to go there and show up and answer the phone. Yeah. So it's been really, really fun. And it's just gotten better and better and better. And I'm sure that you've found, like, as I have found with the three questions, especially, like, you just get, the more you do this, you know, like, the better interviewer you get to be.
Yeah.
And the, you know, sort of with the call-in show, just kind of, I'm learning how to keep it moving, you know, and keep it funny and, you know, and
I mean, that's
on.
Also wrangling feral cats, too.
Yes.
You know, got to be good at that part of it. Because some people can really tell a story and some people cannot
tell a fucking story. Yeah. And there are people that, you can tell the difference. And we try to say, you know, just stick to the real important, because people will be like, well, it was rainy that day. And it's like, nobody cares.
Yeah. You know? Or you'll get the, so your mom died?
Yeah. Yeah, right, exactly.
And I just sit there like,
I haven't had a lot of those lately, but I have had those where it's like, where it is sort of like, so did your parents' divorce bother you?
Yeah.
And? You know,
I can see your genuine enthusiasm for it. I'm the same way. I'm stoked to sit here and talk to you, of course.
Oh, thank you.
But these people have stories.
Oh, yeah.
Unlike any, I mean, we had a guy, and I could go on and on, but I'm the guy now at a place like the paramedic. Like, we had this one guy, you know, and we had a guy that tried to take his own life, laid down on train tracks to have the train cut his head off, laid on the wrong set of tracks. Cuts his legs off and he wakes up in the hospital and he's like, fuck. I mean, shit like that. And he's laughing about it.
Yeah.
And it's like, so that's, you know, specifically this show is laughing at those moments, because what, you know, you can't cry all the time.
No, you can't. And also too, you know, I mean, it is a known statistic that, I think it's like 80 to 90% of the time that somebody screws up killing themselves, they never try it again.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. I wondered if they don't go again for it. Like Not the cry for help stuff.
If they really try it and something doesn't happen, then they, it's, I think it is like 85 to 90% never try it again, which is, that's, you know, I'm one of the things that I have advocated in public about is common sense gun control. Mm-hmm. I don't do it so much anymore because there's a lot of crazy people and I got a lot of other stuff going on. But, you know, one of the things that people used to say when you talk about gun deaths, they'd be like, well, a lot of those are suicides, as if that doesn't count.
Yeah.
But the thing is that guns are so good at killing people that a lot of people that might screw up hanging themselves or might screw up jumping off the roof, mm-hmm. you know, and, or getting their legs cut off instead of their head. A gun doesn't, a gun's really good at killing people.
I would say so.
And so they don't get that opportunity to screw it up and then have a second thought and go like, wait, what was I thinking about? And that's, you know, and it's, there's all kinds of reasons like why people in mental health crises shouldn't be, you know, like somebody should go in and take the guns away.
I have a paranoid schizophrenic cousin.
Yeah.
Definitely shouldn't have a gun.
Yeah.
Definitely should not have a gun.
And does.
No.
No. Okay.
He doesn't. And yeah, he definitely shouldn't. Yeah. Right, no. Right. We are sure.
Yeah.
Like you're not, you know, he's in a facility now and everything. Yeah. These days, so he's not going to.
I grew up in a house with guns. We lived in the country and it was, I don't even think we had like one old pistol that literally was my great grandparents, my great grandfather's that I don't think shot. It didn't even work anymore. But everything else was shotguns and rifles mm-hmm. for hunting. And so I grew up around guns. So people, you know, when I would talk about guns, they'd be like, you want to take all our guns? I'm like, no, I don't. I just think you should leave them at home. You know, you don't need to wear it to the Wendy's, you know, you know, for Christ's sake, you don't need an AR-15
wear it to the Wendy's.
Fucking Baskin Robbins, you know, but
you know what, one time it's, and here's the thing too, you travel this country.
Yeah.
You got to remember what state you're in.
Yes.
When I was in Kansas City, my feature, her name's Hannah. She's like, do you know our opener has a gun on him right now? And I was like, huh? And he did. And then I thought, well, hold on a second. Before we judge this guy, if he's got one on him, how many people in that crowd have it on?
Right, right.
So you know what? We at least have one back here on our side. We can run.
Right, right.
But then I remembered like, oh, yeah, we got to remember where we are in the country. Because,
absolutely.
And I remember driving. And I was in high school. I drove to we drove from Baltimore to Atlanta to see the 49ers and Falcons play.
Yeah.
And we stopped at a McDonald's in North Carolina. And I'm pretty sure it was North Carolina. And this kid came in with like a Jordan tank top on and the big baggy Carolina shorts and like he was in the Wild West with a holster and two guns in it. And I was like, what the fuck? And I was like, we're just leaving.
Were they like old timey revolvers or were they like Glocks?
They were like, modern guns, Glocks in these holsters. And I was like, oh yeah, got to remember sometimes where you are. And also you got to look that law up because there's concealed carry, open carry, there's all that shit out there. You just don't know.
It's unnerving. And it's
that's why I'm just trying to be a good person. Don't get out of your car absolutely. In traffic. And you ain't doing that shit anymore.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get into your story.
All right.
Tell me, in the vein of your podcast, first of all, where are you from originally? Tell me about your parents, your siblings, your only child.
A Midwesterner. I am very much a Midwesterner. I was born in Michigan because my dad, who is from Illinois, my mom and dad are both from Illinois, but he was getting his degree. He teaches the Russian language because he started college in the 50s, and he was a music major because he was very big into classical music, and he was also a singer in like a
your dad
chorus.
Wow, okay.
And so he thought he was going to be a choral director, but then got into music. He went to a little private college in Indiana, and he just didn't like it. So he knew it was kind of Korean War. I think it might have been just after the Korean War, but there was still a draft and he was afraid he was going to get drafted. So he signed up, tested very high for language proficiency, went to the Army Language School in Monterey, which he's from Springfield, Illinois. And he's like, Monterey was the prettiest place he'd ever been in his life. And he was like, they give him a choice of which languages do you want to choose. And he's like, which one keeps me here longest? And they're like, all the other ones, most of them are 6 months, but Chinese and Russian are a year. You could stay here for a year. And he's like, well, all right, I'll take Russian. And that became his vocation. He ended up in the northern Japan, translating.
So wait, literally the beauty of Monterey had him choose between Chinese and Russian.
Absolutely.
And he was like,
he's like, Russian.
I'm going to go Russian. That's, he had no Russian background, no family, no nothing.
Just because
from zero.
Yeah. And probably, I bet you like if French had kept him there for, he'd probably be like, all right, French, but Russian became his thing. And, it was Cold War. And for a long time in his career, it was the Cold War made his area of expertise important. And they had a lot of government people. He taught at Indiana University, and they had a lot of government people come through because they needed to have people that were proficient in Russian. And then as soon as the wall fell, it was like, it's another third world language and nobody gives a shit anymore. That was his job. And he was at Grand Valley State in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And they had me. I have an older brother who's 2 years older. And in about a year and a half, they moved to Bloomington, Indiana, mm-hmm. Where my dad settled at Indiana University. And he taught there his whole career.
Russian? Did he teach Russian?
He taught Russian, yeah. And then when I was four, he came out of the closet and got a divorce. And my mom took my brother and me back to Illinois to live with her parents, my grandparents. So I was I was raised very much by my grandmother too. We were in her house for.
Is this your mom's mom?
Yeah, my mom's mom. We were in her house for probably about 5 years.
All right. Extended family helping.
Yeah. And then my mom got remarried, had two more kids. So I have a half brother and sister who are twins who are 9 years younger than me. And we moved out when she got remarried. But then when my grandpa died, we moved back into that house. So I lived in the house that my great grandfather built.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Built. Wow.
Built, yeah.
What year did he build it in? Do you remember?
I want to say
1890s. 18, dude.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure it was.
That's awesome.
Because my grandfather was born on the dining room table. Like our dining room table. He was born on that table.
They tell you.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. So, and my grandpa died. He was.
Built the house. He couldn't build a new fucking table, for Christ's sake.
Look, you got it. And
make just the picnic table out back, for God's sake.
Well, this table too was an amazing old table that
one of those Game of Thrones type tables.
It expands. I forget what you call it. And then there's leaves that you put in it. Mm-hmm. And it had been, you could seat 20 people around. You could seat either like 6 or 20. Mm-hmm. And there were like supports that you had to put up. And we had, when I was younger and my grandparents' siblings were still alive, we would have big Thanksgivings and big Christmases and we would,
the best.
Have a lot of big family around, a lot of old depressed Swedes. there's pictures of especially my grandma Grace, my mom's family, or all these old Swedes. And it's like, here they are at a big family reunion and, in Minnesota or somewhere. And it's this big table and it's like beautiful sort of like woodsy area. And everyone just looks like this.
Miserable.
Like they're just like they're waiting to get a tooth pulled or something. Just miserable. So so depression was a constant, in our life.
Your dad comes out of the closet when you're four.
Yeah.
Now, do you remember this?
I don't.
When are you told that?
Huh?
When are you informed about this?
My dad told me and my brother, I don't exactly remember, but I bet I was probably, eight or nine.
Young.
Yeah, still young.
But he told you, mom didn't
tell
you.
He told us, and my mom, apparently, it was a conflict between them that he wanted to tell us, and it was also weirdly wrapped into the birds and bees talk. And it all this kind of shit that you hear as a kid. And for years and years, you're like, yeah, that happened. That was how that happened. And then later you're like, oh, that's fucking weird. You know, he had bought my brother and me a pop-up book about how babies are born and sent it to us. And my mom felt that we were too young to see it. And which was, I mean, I'm kind of surprised because my mom was really permissive. Like she was not uptight or conservative. I don't know why. She just decided we were too young to see it. So the next time we went down to Springfield, Illinois to visit my grandparents, my dad's parents, it was Christmas time or one of the holidays. And he was like, come on, we got to go to the mall. And we're like, oh, okay. Get in the car and go to the mall. And he said, he drove us to a park, like this big park in Springfield, and then just like pulled in, parked the car and said, I want to talk to you guys about something. Turned around and told, you know, and he told us the birds and bees part of it
first.
And then said, but there are some people who like
just bees and bees.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. There are some people who are attracted to other, you know,
wow,
to
so
other
people. Wow, so hold on, man. And he's like, a lot. You're getting the birds and bees and also and this, the talk yeah. about, hey,
yeah, yeah.
there's also this thing called homosexuality,
right,
basically.
Right.
Damn, that's a lot.
And my
daughter's mom won't let her get her ears pierced till she's 13.
Really?
she thinks that's too young. And wow. I'm thinking of it.
Wow.
That's heavy, man. Yeah, it's a lot. Okay.
Yeah. You know what? I want to say I was 9 or 10 because I'm putting it together because I just was remembering like the birds and the bees. My brother and I already kind of knew because we live next door to like these older brothers.
That's all you need.
That had older kids had told us everything. So we already kind of knew, you know, the basic mechanics of the whole process. But he told us that and I was kind of like, okay, you know, you're gay. And I don't know if I was young enough that it didn't matter too much. Yeah, that it just was kind of like, you know, it was just information. And I mean, you know, my kids, like kids get the way people are like, what do I tell my children? You just tell them. You know, like there's a couple at church that are two men that are married. What do I tell my kids? Tell them there's some two men at church that are fucking married.
That's it.
It's like, because my older kids, I have a 23-year-old and an 18-year-old, and they grew up, you know, they grew up in LA. So they grew up in a very open environment. My son is gay. My son came out to me when he was 11, and my ex-wife when he was 11. They have lived in a very open environment. All of this sort of what is confusing to old people like me about the they, thems and the gender fluidity, it's not at all confusing to them. A young person comes to them and says, I'm not a he or a she, I'm a they. And they go, okay. There's no like, well, how does that work?
Yeah.
You know, well, what team are you going to play on? You know, it's just, okay.
Yeah, our age was like, all right, we're going to go with the homosexuality.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
I don't know if my mind can get past anything else. God,
well, it is funny, too, because there have been like kids that, you know, like later it turns out like, you know what? She was just a lesbian. Like it's almost it was. They thought for a while that they were something, but yeah, that's just that's just a lesbian. You know. But yeah, so
okay. So wait, can I ask you a few questions?
Of course, you stayed
close with your dad and your mom, but you're living with mom.
Yes.
Are you close with your dad, or is this like a weekend thing? Where is he staying in Bloomington?
He stayed in Bloomington, Indiana.
And how far is that ride?
That's about 4 hours.
Okay, so
that's about 4 hours by car. But we used to take the train and stuff, and there was.
Did you ever meet any of his partners?
No, because he never really had any long term partners.
I see.
He had sort of, I think, hookups, and Bloomington is a very it's in southern Indiana and it's a college town and it's a bastion of kind of liberal weirdness, and especially in Indiana, like that's where all the gay people in Indiana are.
I got you.
Is at Bloomington. But you go outside of the college and it, there's people that talk like
you know. I've spent time
and,
there.
Yeah. And so I think my dad had some like kind of townies that he, you know, just had kind of a regular thing with. But I don't know how good he would be at a long-term relationship. He's a very combative guy. And we haven't spoken in years.
Really?
Yeah. We had a falling out just kind of. And basically because I'm trying to say it because I don't want to get too much into it because I'm sure he doesn't appreciate me talking about it, but it's my life too. And he is my dad. And, you know, one of the things that I don't think he understood was what it means to be a parent is to mean that you give and give and give, and that it's not a quid pro quo. Like it's not, you're not, when you give to your child, it's not an investment that you expect to eventually have a payoff. You do it because that's what you do.
That's right.
Once I had kids, there's a lot of things that when I had kids that as I said, this sounded the same thing, stuff that you just got used to as a kid that when you get to be an adult, you're like, no, that was weird.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with parenting. There was stuff like that was actually kind of hurtful to me, like the fact that, I mean, I saw my dad probably 2 weeks out of the year.
Okay.
and he was 4 hours away. And when he would come, like he would sort of, when he would drive to get us, like somebody would have to meet him halfway to get us. And I just cannot conceive, because I got divorced, I cannot conceive of, even if I was 4 hours away.
That's San Francisco.
I would see my kids more than 2 weeks a year.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, it would destroy me not to.
It'd be every other weekend or something like that.
And, no doubt.
You know, and, you know, come stay with me for the summer kind of stuff. And they're just, I just don't know that for whatever reason, he did not do that. And I honestly, that is kind of frustrating and hurtful to me.
Yeah.
And so there, you know, but that's like, we haven't talked because also too, there's problems with between him and my ex-wife and just, and I basically he did not like that I didn't just do as he said.
Mm.
And didn't just support him and whatever he felt. And if he felt, if there was a conflict between him and my ex-wife, that I should take his side. And I told him numerous times, check with anybody. Ask them. If I have a child and they're married to somebody and there's a conflict between me and their spouse, should they take my side or the spouse's side? Everyone will tell you, yeah. No, this is their spouse.
Yeah.
They have to take the spouse's side. Mm-hmm. That's like, I mean, unless the spouse is smoking crack, you know, and abusing children, that's how it works, mm-hmm. you know? And I don't think he could really handle that. So.
Can I ask you this?
Yeah.
You close with your mom?
Yeah. Yeah, I am.
Do you know if your mom had a hunch that your dad might be gay back then?
No.
Or was it a shock to her?
She told me it blindsided her. But these are 50, you know, she's born in 1940. I think my dad was born in 1937. Truly a different age. Because if you meet my dad, you're like, well, what a distinguished old homosexual, you know? He's got 5,000 classical music albums.
Yeah.
You know, he's a huge opera fan. Like there's just all these things that we now just process as like, oh, that's a gay person.
Mm-hmm.
But no, she didn't. She said that there was a flood of, like things that happened.
Hindsight.
Yeah.
Sure.
That in hindsight she saw, but no, she was very floored by it.
Did he ever repel her or did she catch him? Like, how did that come about?
I do not know exactly, but I think he came out to her. And I found out years later that he wanted to stay married. He's like, let's see if we can work this out. Because I do believe he really did love my mother. Mm-hmm. And they had my mother's older sister, Pat, she was like the star of my life and probably the main reason why I'm in show business. Because she, and I said this, I didn't write, I said this while I was kind of eulogizing her at a family memorial thing. I said, she insisted on having fun, like all the time. Like she'd come to town and it was like the circus was in town. She was a star in my life. And when she would come visit, it was exciting. Aunt Patty's coming.
And you didn't have that when Dad was coming. Not that.
Well, no, I was very excited. I love my dad very much, and I missed him tremendously, and it was very hurtful to be separate from him, which is one of the reasons why it's hurtful in retrospect that I did not see him as much as I did. Mm-hmm. But
Patty was something.
She was the superstar of my life. Yeah, she was my favorite person, and I was her favorite person.
Okay.
And my dad and Pat went to high school together, and they were best friends, and they both were fucking funny people. Both, I mean, my dad's one of the sharpest, wittiest, you know, funniest people you'll ever meet. Just an amazingly big brain and very witty and very, you know, and likes to laugh and stuff. But also, you know, numerous times I saw him make clerks cry because he felt like he was not getting the service he should. But they were best friends. And my mom was kind of the little sister tag along while she was in junior high and they were in high school. And then it just kind of developed into a romance between my mom and dad. Okay. And I really do think that there was a real romance there. And I do think they really did love each other. But I just, you know, it's just kind of the tragedy of a world where people can't be who they want to be.
I was just about to say, Imagine being stuck in a prison where you're in the military. Back then, you better not fucking be gay.
Yeah.
You better not let anybody know. Right. I mean, so many just prisons and traps all along that way.
Yeah.
That is doomed for failure that way.
Yeah. And it's one of the things, too, like from having a gay son, having a gay child, when I hear about parents that are shitty to their kids when they come out, it doesn't bother me as much as it used to, but there was a time when it would, like, it was so upsetting to me and it would make me so angry and so furious that how someone could do that, how their child feeling safe enough or just in some cases desperate enough to say, hey, I got some unpopular news you're not going to like.
Yeah, I'm struggling with this shit too.
Here it is. And to not go,
who cares?
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you for telling me that, you know, like, go be yourself and go love whoever the fuck you want to love. You know, it still upsets me, but not like there was just a while, you know. And as you know, as my son was going through school.
Can I stop you for 1 second? Mm-hmm. Just ask you. So you said he came out to you at 11.
Yeah.
Did you already have talks with him about your father being gay? Like, did you make it known or anything so he was comfortable enough? Or you just.
I don't have any recollection of doing that. So I mean, we had gay friends and he.
Okay.
And so, we were friends with gay couples.
All right. So he wasn't an outsider necessarily.
No,
okay.
No. And it was funny, too, because when he was little, he really seemed to be drawn to the gay men in our life. Like, so I think he was, there's just that natural identification that, you know, you read about people mm-hmm. having.
Science.
Yeah. And so that was kind of like, and I was not expecting, I didn't like look at him and think, you know, I think my son might be gay. But then that's also too, like, I try not to lay things on people until they tell me what they are, you know?
Well, that's the other thing I'm sitting here laughing about our generation is like, I don't think about if my kid's gay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then this generation's like, I don't think about if my son's a girl or
right,
not.
Right.
I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I'm a little lost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to keep up, everybody.
Right, yeah, right.
It's changing. It's advancing quickly.
It's changing, but it all ends up the same. It all ends up being like, it's not that big a deal. Mm. You know, I mean, and it's not anything that we can't handle. It's not anything we can't understand. Because there have been certainly, I mean, there's societies that we think of as primitive that handled all this shit a lot better than we do, you know.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good point. Okay, so now you're living with mom and your grandmom's involved. So what's it like having just a primary and Pat, is it Pat or Patty?
Pat. Yeah, she was Pat now, but right. Aunt Patty when she Aunt was Patty. Younger. Yeah.
So you've got three very prominent ladies in your life now.
Absolutely.
Raising you. What's that like?
Did
you look for a male influence? Did they bring one in, or were these teachers, coaches, that sort of thing? Like,
no, I didn't seem to. I had my Uncle Bill. I loved my Uncle Bill, my mom's older brother, okay. And he was local, and I loved him very much, and he was fun, and I liked having him around. But honestly, I didn't feel like I was missing anything. Mm-hmm. But I definitely was raised by women. I was in a matriarchy, and I still probably, like, if you invite me to your house and it's Thanksgiving or it's the Super Bowl or whatever, and all the women are in, you know, the den, and all the men are watching TV, and I'm going where the women are.
Me too, dude.
Because that's where the fun is.
That's from my grandmom and her sisters and everything. Yeah. To this day, I love old ladies that play cards, talk shit, and watch sports.
Yeah.
And if there's a gathering of ladies, I always find it's easier to talk to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm with you on that.
And they're just, I mean, guys talk about boring shit, like stuff I'm not that interested in, you know, because women talk more about, like, feelings and relationships, and men want to talk about, you know, sports and pussy. And, you know, I like baseball and I like pussy, but I don't want to talk to anybody about either one that much, you know.
Not the whole Super Bowl.
yeah. Just, you know. I was raised by women, and I'm glad. I'm glad. And I identify, you know. It's made it so I do identify with women, and I you know, like online, like I have referred to myself as a feminist, which people love to shit on, but it's like, you come up with a better word for acknowledging that women get the shit end of the stick just in our society from the get-go. And like, sure, there's some ways that they might, you know, have their own levers of power over in men and stuff, but no, it's like nobody ever, especially white men, nobody ever was like questioning whether or not white men should be able to vote. Like, the fact that 50% of the population that they thought they shouldn't have a voice in government is mind blowing to me. And I'm, you know, and it makes me fucking angry. And there's thing, and I've always said too, that there's two things that if you told me that, say, because of whatever, because of my name starts with an A, that I only get to make 75 cents on the dollar, and that other people get to make a dollar, but I only get 75 cents because my name starts with an A, I would be fucking furious around the clock. If you told me too, if I also lived in a world where I can't walk to my car at night by myself because someone might forcibly fuck me or kill me or beat the shit out of me, and I have to do that everywhere I am and every time I want to go to my car by myself or walk two blocks by myself, I would be constantly furious. I would be constantly angry. And I don't understand, you know, that. So I don't understand, like, why that's a problem, why to feel like that is a problem and makes me like a buzzkill. It's like, it just does not seem fair. It's a really, and I, you know, I think just being around mom and grandma and and aunts and, you know, that's why. My best friends are still women. My sister and my wife and, you know, and other friends, you know, I have good male friends too, but like the ones that I really lean on are women.
Yeah. Well, they shaped your whole view of the world.
Yeah,
you actually saw what they went through.
Absolutely.
And especially women back then too.
Like, yeah.
It's the Honeydew is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to take a moment out to thank my producer, Kirsten, sitting out there, who is the best. I mean, this lady's a rock. She's come here and worked from day one. Just crushed it. Absolutely crushes it. She's the reason you see a lot of this stuff. And I want to say thank you very much, Kirsten. And this month is all about gratitude. And along with the person I just shouted out, there's another person we don't get to thank enough, ourselves. It's sometimes hard to remind ourselves that we are trying our best to make sense of everything. And in this crazy world, that isn't easy. So here's a reminder to send some thanks to the people in your life, including yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You know, we talk about mental health on the show all the time. It's getting bigger and bigger, which is great, especially men's mental health awareness. So if it's something you're even considering, give it a shot. All right. Let the gratitude flow with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/honeydew today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/honeydew. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/honeydew. The Honeydew is sponsored by Liquid IV. Whether you forget to take a sip of water during the office holiday party or you start feeling parched after a long day of traveling, keep Liquid IV on hand to stay hydrated through the holidays. With convenient packets of their hydration multiplier or sugar-free hydration multiplier, you get 8 vitamins and nutrients, 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, and no artificial sweeteners. It's easy to do. You just grab 16 ounces of water, you tear, you pour, you shake, and you sip. One stick and 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. Powered by Liquid IV HydroScience, an optimized ratio of electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients that turn ordinary water into extraordinary hydration. 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, 8 essential vitamins and nutrients, always non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free. Stay hydrated through the holidays with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code HONEYDEW at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code HONEYDEW at liquidiv.com. Now, let's get back to the do. I mean, so if you say you lived in a house your grandfather built or great-grandfather
built.
So, yeah, your great-grandmom's not voting.
No.
And neither are probably their kids.
No.
Yeah, when was it for women? What year was it? 19 what?
It's in the 20s, I think.
Oh, well, maybe their kids were the first.
Yeah, to vote. Yeah. I think it was the 20s.
Yeah, I it's so funny. I'm so ignorant sometimes. I had a friend say to me, and this was just like in the last 2 years, like, Ryan, do you get scared about any woman that passes you on the sidewalk? And I was like, no, not once. And also, most men I'm not scared of to pass me on the sidewalk.
Right, right.
Even a muscular dude walking by, I don't think he's going to come at me.
Right.
But they do.
Yeah.
Because they have.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. And it hit me then to like, imagine every male that walks by, you got to worry about like, because also biologically, he's going to fucking out muscle you.
Yeah.
And he can take you just because he wants to.
Right. Like,
that's a fucked up world.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I'll be honest. There's a few people at night when I'm walking in my car and I see those sketchy people. I don't know. I kind of hope one of them wants to do something every now and then. But I bet you a lady doesn't.
Because you got to work something out. You got some old issues you want to work out on somebody.
Some family shit I want to take out. Yeah. Legally. Yeah. All right. So growing up through, are you playing sports and what are you doing growing up?
I'm playing sports. I have an older brother who's 3 years older than me, who's big in sports, as basketball too. I'm 6'1". He's like 6'5".
Okay.
So he was, he played basketball. I played sports too. I played Little League, you know, but I wasn't really like, and my mom is a tomboy. Like my mom taught me. To like she did what her brother taught her, which is stand us up against the barn, which had been at that point converted into a garage. There was no animals in it. stood me up against the garage door and threw a baseball at me as hard as she could. And she could throw it really fucking hard.
You mean with a glove so you
could
Okay, I was like, wait,
that was playing catch. And it was like, I'm going to throw this at you hard and you have to catch it. And so it wasn't like I didn't have, I definitely didn't have a male influence that was like, let's sit down and watch the ball game. My grandpa watched the Cubs all the time. But he was so old, he was really old. Yeah. And so it was like grandpa's watching the baseball game. And, you know, when I was a little kid, baseball was boring. I didn't have anybody kind of explain it to me. And then when I got into high school, I played football for a while and I played tennis and I did play, played baseball a year, played basketball a couple of years. But towards the end of high school too, I got a job. I stopped playing sports.
What'd you do?
I worked at a grocery store.
Okay.
I mean, I've had jobs. I've been working since I was 13 because I had paper routes. I started with paper routes, a couple different ones. And also too, my stepfather had a plumbing business and I used to go in the summertime. I'd go to work with him. There was most days throughout the summer, I would either be in the shop selling parts or I would go out with the plumber to help, you know, crawling under houses and stuff. And there was time last summer, my daughter and I went to a place to get a breakfast burrito and I saw like a dad, like a tradesman, like he's a carpenter or something. And like his like 8-year-old son sitting with him. And I was like, I got like a contact, like, oh my God, that poor fucking kid, like got to go to different job sites and it was not fun. And it was probably very formative to me on like the workaday world where I was just like, ugh, this is not fun.
Not for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you feel like growing up with your dad and distance and, you know, being that way and your mom and the ladies in your life, how do you feel that has affected you as a parent? They're shaped the way you parent.
Well, people, you know, I had kids early for like my group of friends. Like I was one of the first people in my group of friends to have kids.
How old were you for your first kid?
27.
Okay.
Yeah, 27. No, wait. No, shit, 34. What am I talking about? No, because I was born in 66 and he was born in 2000. So, yeah.
Yeah.
34. So, I was a little – and my ex-wife and I had been married for 7 years before we had kids.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There was a miscarriage and, you know, so we were together for a while. And then – but, you know, it's like We would have had kids earlier, but there was, like I say, there was a miscarriage and then work things that came up for her that was just like, she's like, well, I got this job that I don't want to get pregnant right now. So it took us a little bit more, but we'd been together for 7 years, nine if you married for 7 years. So it was a little bit late, but it was still kind of early for most of my, you know, I mean, showbiz people tend to have kids a little bit later, you know. I think
these days a lot of people are having them later.
I mean, I think it's still very common to be like to think back to people having kids at her 20 and
man, like, what and seeing fuck? What our parents went through and how expensive it is now too. Like it makes sense to me. I know Mother Nature wants us to have them younger, but
yeah,
good luck affording that.
Yeah. But a lot of people, you know, ask me about like fathering and what is my philosophy of fathering. And it's like, I kind of feel like I just mother because that's what I, you know, like I'm just mothering.
That's well said.
I'm just mothering because that's what I know. Like, I don't know.
What's your secret to fatherhood is like, mothering.
Yeah. Just be a mother, you know? And I mean, I can't be a mother. I can't because I just can't. And there definitely is gender differences in terms of ways that I can care for the child that I, you know, that not, I'd say there's more ways that my wife can care for the child than I can't. There's not a lot of ways that like I can care for the child that she can't. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, she's mommy, and mommy is the queen of the kid's life, and that you just, you know, you gotta roll with that. I just am trying to be supportive and kind of, you know, go with my gut and early on when I had kids, and also be honest to them and respect them. And a big thing like that I found
support them
is having the ability to apologize to them if you fuck up. Cause I don't feel like anybody ever did that. Like, I don't feel like anybody ever said, hey, I yelled at you too much just then.
Oh,
you know, like, no, there was nothing like that. Mm-hmm. Or like, I have been yelling at you for the last 7 years and I'm sorry because I'm very upset about a lot of other stuff, but it comes out on you.
Yeah.
So I also too, now that I have older kids, there is one aspect of parenting that I don't exactly know what to do with. And that is in terms of inspiring them to be ambitious. Because I know so many people that wanting to prove something to usually their father, but often to both parents, but like, I want to prove to them that I am. And then you fill in the blank. I never had that. I didn't have anything to prove to anybody. I just had my own desire to do fun stuff for a living and to, you know, like, I like movies and TV. So maybe I'll go work over there. And, you know, and I'm, you know, I make people laugh. So maybe I'll figure out a way to do that. And oh, I like to do it with people. Oh, I'll do improv, you know, but never, like, I was never trying to show my dad, like, I'll show you. Right. I'm going to get into long form improv, you know? So I wonder, like, was I supposed to do more of that? Was I supposed to do more like, you've got to get good grades and you've got it? Cause I, you know,
more of it to your kids. Well, did your kids get good grades?
They did get good grades, but I don't know.
Okay. Looking back now that you've got, they're adults. Your two grown, yeah, right? Yeah. They're adults. What would you have done differently?
Probably nothing.
I mean,
probably nothing. And I also probably am the main thing that I'm also like, cause they are going out into the world and they're turning into adults. And that gives me anxiety. And I'm probably just projecting the shit that I don't like about myself. That, you know, like my own sort of like, I should have worked harder. I should have tried harder. I should have taken the world by the balls more. And, you know, rather than just kind of being passive in my work life and just sort of going with the flow, I should have written more and, you know, pushed more and, you know, and now I'm old enough that I'm kind of like, eh, you didn't. Maybe that wasn't you.
Maybe you did exactly what
you were supposed to do and just spent a lot of time feeling shitty about it. And now, and I mean, and it has been in the last few, like, I just kind of decided to stop feeling shitty about it, to stop going to bed feeling like I didn't do enough today.
How? Is that a mental thing you're doing yourself?
Yeah.
You're just trying to change your mind?
That I'm not working hard enough. I got this thing going. And I mean, and people hear this too, and they're like, I've had a really nice career. And I have a really nice life. And people are like, what the fuck are you talking about? Mm-hmm. It's been really nice. And I'm like, yes, I know it's nice, but that doesn't matter in here, you know, because I'm still the same fucking asshole that I always was like picking on myself about, I don't do that anymore. Like huge thing that I came to in my life was realizing that the people that talk nice to me, I'll do anything for them. Like if I'm in a job situation, like I used mm-hmm. to work freelance in film production in Chicago, bosses that were nice to me and treated me well and, you know, were happy to see me and I'd do anything for them. The ones that treated me shitty and that looked down their nose at me and were kind of assholes to me, I'd fucking steal money from them. You know, I'd make up petty cash receipts and take money from them. And I started to think, well, the way that you talk to yourself, if you tell yourself you're a piece of shit and, oh, there you go, lazy fucking, you know, asshole, not doing what he's supposed to do. That voice is just going to make you go, well, fuck that guy. I'm not going to listen to that guy. I'm not going to do what that guy wants. Whereas if I tell myself, you're good at stuff and, you know, try a little harder and you can do it and, you know, and think about, like, you know, how much better you feel when you are productive as opposed to when you're not productive. And, you know, and when you exercise and when you get out and do, you know, talk to myself with kindness, and it's like, oh yeah.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go
big time
on a fancy water bottle
with ultra titanium alloy metal.
You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water.
But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time
for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
But what made you hit that wall? What made you finally go, enough of this fucking shit? Because I look in the mirror and I don't say kind things. Looking at things and going, your nose looks great. Yeah. You're great at. And at your fucking skin.
Yeah. The physical stuff, I just shove that in a drawer because I never am going to enjoy the sound of my own voice. I'm never going to like the way I look. I just think, I can look at some pictures and go, hey, I look pretty good there. But most of the time I'm going to be like, oh my God, what a fucking pile of pudding you are, you know?
But what did you hit where you're like, no more, I'm going to bed feeling good about myself, damn it.
Well, I'm not exactly sure. Like, there was no, like, you know, shaft of heavenly light that hit me. But it's a combination of lots of therapy, medication. I do think that at some point, like, just my brain aged into not being so sad all the time. I might be wrong about that, but I just kind of feel like, you know, like the way, you know, people late in life develop a shellfish allergy. You know, I mean, it's like it just evolved in a way. It's like, hey, we don't have to be sad all it. Like the serotonin got fixed or whatever. And I also started to, be a little more honest, be a lot more honest with myself about situations that were making me unhappy and stopping those situations and feeling like my eyes kind of being open to, well, I definitely do realize that and this is like towards the end of my marriage, there was a day when I was sitting on the side of my bed looking out the window and I just thought, the rest of my life cannot be this. Like, this is like what was like, just like the best I could expect was kind of a detente, you know, like kind of like just tolerating each other. Mm-hmm. And I just was like, I can't do that. Because mm-hmm. When you think about your life in chunks, you know, it's like there's your childhood, then there's your adult life. And now I'm going into like the later adult life into, you know, hello grave. And I do think like, it's like, you know, this is, I'm reaching a 2/3 point here. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to, I can't do this anymore. And, you know, and there were lots of attempts to reverse that. And it was fucking awful. The worst thing I've ever been through. But it was necessary, and it was painful and awful. And I never in a million, I think I was so in reaction to my mom's two divorces, because mm-hmm. I lived through her second divorce, which involved some alcoholism and some abuse and the sheriff coming to our house kind of stuff. And I think I was so affected by that. Well, when I was a kid, like I was never going to get laid because I couldn't just fucking relax. Every time I'd meet somebody, it'd be like they'd do, you know, they'd say something that I was like, well, we're not getting married, you know? And not that I had any moral hang up about you got to be getting married to have sex with somebody, but just everything was so dire. Like I just couldn't relax and have fun when it came to having, you know, a woman in my life. And eventually I just had to kind of, eventually it's like, you got to relax. And yeah. I was able to kind of relax and learn how to like enjoy dating and enjoy having a girlfriend. I did do a lot of lopsided giving versus taking with all of my relationships. And I sort of like started to, it's only as, like I said, on one of the, I think it was on, you know, it's like, it's now, it's not, it's, I didn't tweet it because I'm not on Twitter very much anymore, but I said, like, you know, the thing nobody tells you about life that it takes like about 40 or 50 years to get the fucking hang of it.
Yeah.
You know, being alive, it takes that long.
Well, also, I'm sitting here thinking, too, like as children, we're just pushed and pulled in these places and directions with these people that we're forced to go.
Yeah.
Once your children are now adults, it's like, okay, at least we get some say in this shit now.
Yes.
And I can try to figure out what the fuck I'm doing. But that's at 20. You still another 30 motherfucking years before you finally go. The same, I think about parenting all the time and what a long-term game it is. It's not until your kids are probably in their 30s. And if you live long enough for them to come back and be like, man, how'd you do it? How'd you do this and that? You know, it's like, you know, it's not that instant hit like stand-up is with a joke and a laugh right away. It's an investment.
Transaction.
It's an investment.
And it's again, stand-up or any kind of, it's a transaction. I give you this and you give me something back.
Hopefully.
Yeah. And with kids, like, all you're really hoping for is love.
Mm-hmm.
And there's whole swaths of their development where they're not even going to give you love. They're part of their development is going to be hating your fucking guts.
Yeah.
And they have to. Like, it's natural and good for them to be like, you don't know anything, you fucking old idiot. That's like how they become healthy adults is to say, fuck you, you know? That's like, you know, baby, something that was fascinating to me is that, and I read this somewhere, you know, there's that when babies are born, like there's that those early, early developmental stages where they don't even understand that they're separate from mommy. That they and mommy are the same thing. And there reaches a particular point, I don't remember what point it is, where they are like, no, I am a different person. Mommy is their own person. I'm my own person. And usually the first verbal like expression of that selfness is saying no. It's saying, because go here, lay down here, come over here, eat, you know, change your diaper. Like everything is yes until it's like, wait a minute, I have a personality. I'm my own thing. And I'm going to say no. You know, I'm going to stop mm-hmm. the flow of things. And that's, you know, that's, it's interesting to me that like a big part of taking care of yourself and being a healthy grown up is when you say no. And when you like go, nah, I am going to speak up and boundaries. I am going to do something. Yeah. Yeah.
Setting them early.
Yeah.
I wish I learned that earlier. So I'm still shitty with boundaries.
Yeah. I try to get better and I try, you know, and
how many moves I went on just cause I wasn't comfortable with, you know, helping people move just cause I'm uncomfortable with boundaries. Like, yeah, I'll come help you. Oh, I don't want to fucking help you.
I know. I had a fucking pickup truck.
Y'all, dude, forget
and it. But it got to the point where I was like, you can have my truck, yeah. but I'm not going to fucking.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, that'd still help.
I got other things. I got something else, but you can have my truck. And then, you know, and people bring it back on empty with an ashtray full of cigarette butts. Just my fucking friends, you know.
Dude, thank you for doing this.
Oh, you're welcome. It was a great episode. It was great to talk to you. Yeah.
Before we wrap up, advice you would give to 16-year-old Andy Richter?
You know, I did a live version of my podcast in San Francisco with Rachel Dratch, and somebody asked that question, and I said it, and it's was, you know, I knew it would probably get.
Do you remember what you said?
Yeah, I said learn to love cardio. And, you know, I mean, I knew it would get a laugh, but I was also kind of like, I'm not really kidding.
Yeah.
Like, but I would expand that, a little bit more to myself. But I mean, that's like one aspect of it, but it would just be sort of like push a little harder on the sort of drudgery of making yourself better. Push a little harder on exercising and push a little harder on saying goodbye to people that treat you shitty. Push a little harder on working on things, you know, on expressing yourself. Push a little harder, you know, to get used to, get into the habit of pushing, because I do feel like I went with the flow a lot where I could have, if I had had a little bit more discipline and a little bit more practice and at pushing against the flow of things and saying, nope, I'm going to go another way. I think I'd be a little better off just sort of, you know, I'm like I say, it's always weird to say these kind of things because I'm very happy. I like my life a lot, you know, and I don't really have, a lot of regrets. I think if I would have moved to a place where they had good public schools, to raise my first two kids, that I think I could have done because I spent a lot of money on private schools. But other than that, I'm like, no, everything that's happened to me had to happen in the way that it did and had to unfold in the way that it did. But I do think that I would be in a better place and I would like myself better. And I would, you know, I would have gotten to where I am quicker if I had been more practiced in having discipline in pushing myself to be better at stuff.
Great answer.
Thank you.
Again, thank you. And promote whatever you'd like one more time.
Well, there's the Andy Richter Call-In Show on Sirius XM, Channel 104, and then which is on Wednesdays. And then The Three Questions, which is also on that channel. It plays there, but you can get it wherever you get podcasts. And The Three Questions with Andy Richter. And that's it.
Thank you, Andy Richter.
You're welcome.
This was great.
You're welcome.
As always, Ryan Sickler on all your social media. Thank you guys very much. We'll talk to y'all next week.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast, you end up waiting a lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. That's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own. Surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.